Welcome to Boiling Point, the podcast to motivate ever-evolving entrepreneurs and forward-thinking movement pioneers. Our hosts, filmmaker Greg Hemmings and executive coach Dave Vail, are turning up the heat in the world's business communities. Our interviews with entrepreneurs, thought leaders, and movement makers are raising the temperature of inspiration. Live from the hottest studio in this quadrant of the universe, here are Dave and Greg.
Hey, Boiling Pointers. Thanks so much for tuning into this week's episode. Before we start, Dave and I want to let you know all about our Boiling Point Process online courses, live events, and masterminds. After interviewing hundreds of leaders, we've packaged a ton of knowledge together to serve up to you. Info that will help you and your company be heard in a very noisy marketplace. So visit www.boilingpointprocess.com and sign up for the email newsletter, and we'll let you know when our next cohort or event is. Thanks also for supporting The Boiling Point by subscribing to us on iTunes and also leaving a rating for us. Welcome to The Boiling Point, Zach. We're jumping right into this. So bring your microphone as if you're kissing it, Zach.
Okay.
Dave, this is my friend Zach, who is a dear friend of mine.
But Zach looks different. Last time I saw him, even though I've never seen him before.
I think he lost a few pounds, but not from his body.
Yeah.
I dropped dropped
a few pounds from the top of my head. Yeah.
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 I have over the years. Yep. The same thing.
So Zach, welcome to the Boiling Point. A number of episodes ago, probably a couple of years ago, we had Jeff Schnur, former partner in Community Forest International and co-founder. So let's just start with you giving us an introduction about who you are and what CFI is.
Sure. So, and thanks for having me, guys. I'm really excited to be here.
And thanks for being here in person. You drove all the way from Sackville. Or did you come here from Tanzania? One of the two.
Sackville this time.
Okay,
yeah.
Right. Okay,
yeah.
Good.
So I'm a co-founder of an organization called Community Force International, co-founded with Jeff and two other friends. And we work helping communities both in Tanzania and here in New Brunswick to adapt to climate change. And, you know, it's kind of interesting. It started in a really sort of organic way, but, you know, the whole impetus for the organization and everything started in a tree planting camp in Northern Ontario 10 years ago now. Jeff was traveling and he was having conversations. He was in this small island called Pemba in the east coast of Tanzania, in the middle of the Indian Ocean. And they found out that Jeff was a tree planter. And we're like, oh, you can help us reforest our island because the island is quite deforested. And Jeff being 21 at the time, and if you knew Jeff, yeah, he's an ambitious fellow. So he immediately was like, yes, we can do that. We can help you restore your island. Came back.
Who says that, by the way? If you're just traveling and there's a deforested island dealing with drought and all the other social implications, and this 21-year-old says, yeah, I'll give it a go.
Yeah, that's Jeff, but then he came back and I don't know how much you know about Canadian tree planting, but you know, tree planting's great, but you know, up there in the north, you're in a clear cut all day long. Like, you know, it's backbreaking work, and you get a little disenchanted. It's a monoculture species, and you know, you go out there wanting to do some real good work, and you know, we were doing it, you know, going to university and really wanting to make a difference. And kind of got hit with the reality of it. And then, you know, hearing Jeff talk about, you know, this little seed that had been planted, pardon the pun, in Tanzania, you know, I just became really inspired by it. And Jeff was a good friend of mine. And I was like, you know what, maybe we can do something. Maybe we can do this, you know. And now it's 10 years on and we've planted 2 million trees on the island.
And how big is that? Just for context.
It's about 100 square kilometers. It's quite small. I don't know. There's lots of smaller islands, but yeah, it's not a big place. It has a really high population. People have been living there for centuries. It's a really, it's like a trade route from Oman. There's like these trade winds that blow down from the Middle East. So there's this really, really ancient trade route happening there. And so the island has just an incredible diversity of plants from all the trading over the years and really useful species of trees. So, you know, the communities there grow 30 different species, you know, and they got mango, avocado, lychee, date. They just have like, I just could just go on and on. And, you know, they grow vanilla bean, and it's just an incredible cornucopia of products that they can grow all from trees. So they're really in a great position. So we've been kind of working with them to build nurseries, to do research, to help, you know, grab like secure land for communities, just to transform their agriculture so it's more resilient to climate change. Because yeah, like the a food system that's in a forest, you know, has all those benefits of a forest, of shade and water retention and all these really great benefits that, you know, make them less at risk for the changing climate.
And just really quick, what happened? Like it seems like it was deforested at a certain point. And I spent a bit of time in Haiti exploring this issue where to cook food, people need charcoal. And a lot of the ways, this is the reason why Haiti got, one of the reasons it got deforested is because as soon as a tree gets big enough to even have a chance of surviving, gets cut down, turned into charcoal so people can heat their food, you know, for survival purposes. Yeah. Is something similar on Pemba, or is it like what happened there?
For sure. Yeah, it's very, very similar. I mean, it's a high population, small land mass, and people do cook with charcoal and with wood. So there's a natural resource pressure there. So that's where a lot of the deforestation came. I will give them credit, though. I think if of the people I know here, if we were 400,000 people on 100 square kilometers, we'd probably get through it in a year. They rationed a bit. They did a great job of it, but like, you know, at a certain point, there's some resource pressures there. But you know, that's one of the things we've kind of been tackling it from a lot of different positions. We don't just plant trees. We do a lot of trying to take a holistic view of it. So, we're trying to take our cues from the communities there because, you know, when we started this, we had no idea what we were doing. We're, like I said, Jeff was 21, I was 23. You know, we were not the experts. And it was clear who was the experts. It was the communities on the ground. We're like, well, let's facilitate. Let's make this happen. And I think we forget that a lot of the time is that these communities, you know, going in and saying you have the solution just isn't a solution. It's a problem.
Right.
And so, you know, I think that was one of the biggest things we had on our side. We didn't know what we were doing. And then we went into it with some humility and just came with this great project that was really led by communities there. And sorry, just to get back to what you were saying, there was a woman who, you know, we found that was doing this clay stove. She found the clay, made these stoves. I don't know where she learned it, but, you know, they use about half as much wood as just the three stone method, which is really common there. And it's really smoky too. It's really unhealthy to cook in your house when the smoke is just like pouring over you. So we're really amazed with her design, kind of put her in a position to train other people, brought everybody together. And now those stoves literally are everywhere. They're everywhere we go. And it wasn't an idea we brought in. That's the idea of like the facilitation that can really be powerful.
So and Jeff outlines this, I mean, I'm recalling a lot of the story he outlined in a podcast we did with him a couple, 2 years ago, maybe, I think. But like as I'm listening to you, so kudos to you guys. You saw a challenge, you had people that are willing to collaborate with you. And was a company born from that challenge, like in Zanzibar? Like, is that...
That's how we got our start, yeah.
Yeah, because it's so interesting, right? Like we got a challenge, we're going to go and we're going to help or be part of, and I love how you say with humility, which is, I think, is so smart, you know, to facilitate supporting change here. We're young and naive enough, you know, to think we can make a difference, which you clearly have, which must be so rewarding. And then, so that now you've created a company around this, and it sounds like things are going well. So I understand. Is there like you have New Brunswick roots? Is there a connection to New Brunswick? How does this, you know, how does that experience help your experience here or expansion of the company? I'm really curious about that sort of thing.
Yeah, for sure. We started there and I think really quickly, like you said, we're just inspired by what they were able to achieve, you know. We started really small, you know, it was funded by like our peers, like we didn't have any money from anywhere. And we just saw communities just like taking it up and doing really well. And we were like, this is incredible. So it pushed us to want to do more there, but it also made us realize that like anything is possible. And, you know, these are the changes we want to see in our communities. Like, you know, we live in a rural place. Like Pemba is a rural place, and so do we. We have a lot of the same challenges. Like, you know, we have some issues around deforestation. They aren't the same drivers.
Right. This is, and we're talking about New Brunswick now.
Yeah, sorry, talking about New Brunswick now. Yeah. So, you know, and I think we were just inspired by our experiences to know that we could do this at home, and that we should do it at home. We should do it in both places. You know, it's like we should do it in as many places as we can. Yeah. We're small, so but we can certainly do it there because it's working, and we can do it where we live.
So what's happening here? I'm curious about that.
Okay, yeah. So let's jump into that. So, I mean, for a long time, again, we were so young. When we started, we just started finding like these old mentors, like these people in the forest. We'd go and like, it's like the rural internet, you know, you talk to grandma and she tells you about like, you know, this amazing person. You have to go and see and talk to. And so we sought out these people. And
this is in New Brunswick?
This is in New Brunswick, okay, yeah. And learned a ton about just about forest health and forest management, and became really inspired about what would be possible here in New Brunswick. And then so we did workshops. And then you fast forward to a point now where the world is starting to recognize that we need to kind of, you know, climate change is real and we need to address
it. Is it real?
It's friggin' real. It's friggin' real.
Let's not go there.
What did Trump say? He was like, oh, we're going to have great climate. It's going to be great climate.
Yeah.
We're going to rake the forest.
Sorry. Yeah.
Continue, Zach. Sorry.
No worries. No worries. In there. Yeah.
So we're all in agreement that we'll start there.
And I mean, you know, I got lots of other points we can make about that. But like, let's take that as the base. Yeah. So, yeah, we were starting to think, well, there's nothing, you know, what we have right now is trees. Trees are incredible. My friend Dale talks about it. You know, he's really a driver of this whole work that we do around carbon forestry. And, you know, he challenges people to think about trees as a new technology. Like, what would you do if I told you we had a carbon vacuum that you could leave out all winter long, that self-replicates, that, you know, when you're done with it, you can like, is like an incredible material that you can do a million things with, that's trees.
Yeah.
We have the solution. Like the crazy thing about climate change.
It's funny when you describe it that way. It's like,
so exciting.
It's brilliant. You know,
I want
like,
that. I'm investing. What is it?
I'll throw money at you. Where do I sign?
Yeah, and like so, we have the solutions. I think that that's another thing. You know, I work across the organization because we're small, and I'm a co-founder, but I do a lot of work on communications, and I am frustrated a lot of the time by how we talk about climate change as this, like, you know, it's like, oh, can we do this? It's so hard. It's a challenge. We need to do it. Like, but it is gonna make our lives better. Like, if we can go to zero emissions, like, let's set that as a goal. And as human beings, if we hit that, everybody's life is getting better. The planet is getting better. The economy is getting better. Like, it's just a fact of the matter. We need to do this, and we just need to step up and stop dragging our feet. That's my opinion.
Yeah. Well, and you need, but I mean, to do what you're doing, it makes sense to have that opinion.
Yeah.
And that's good. I mean, that's why we need people. So then you look, and I just wrote down the carbon forestry because I just never really, it's a new term
for me.
I
didn't even answer your question. Sorry.
So tell us about, you got this wonderful province in Eastern Canada.
Carbon vacuum.
Yes. And you're going to take some learnings, and you've got this passion for, you know, kind of what's happening. So how does that start to create an opportunity here?
Well, you know, in New Brunswick, we have, you know, two really great resources. Obviously, our people, we're incredible. And then we are smack dab in the middle of a huge forest base. Our land is mostly forested. We have what's called the Acadian Forest here. And I know a lot of people are like, forest, a forest, a forest. It's hard to look out and see, you know, what am I looking at here? Mm-hmm. But, you know, the Maritimes, a little bit of Maine, a little bit of Quebec is the Acadian Forest. It is an endangered forest type. And so what we do, and it actually, unlike forests in California and other places, like the Acadian Forest has a very, very low incidence of burning or forest fire. Naturally.
Because of the diversity of the...
Exactly.
Yeah.
And also just, you know, we have a kind of a bit of a fog thing going on here. I don't know, you guys are in St. John.
We have noticed that a few times.
Yeah, so a really moist climate.
We have a natural air conditioner.
That's right. So, you know, we have this opportunity. The world is valuing trees more than ever because they're carbon vacuums. And, you know, not everywhere has trees. You know, Abu Dhabi, these places, they don't have these. We do. And right now, we only value trees at when they're cut as wood, as a product. Trees have zero value as living organisms that are doing a myriad of incredible functions for us. So the world right now has started to value carbon as saying, you know what, we've never valued the water, we've never valued the air, we've never done the accounting on this. We need to, or we're in a lot of trouble. So, you know, your price on carbon, all this, you know, my favorite, carbon tax, you know, like health tax or any, you know what I mean? Like the...
Not pollution tax, carbon tax. Yeah.
The framing's a little, you know, off for us. But anyway, basically, you know, what we've done is you know, as an organization, we really go for impact. We want to see the impact on the landscape, you know, and for us, you know, forests and communities are the, we want to help communities, rural communities be healthy, and we want forests to be healthy. Those are the impacts that we're shooting for.
And rural communities and forests.
Yeah, okay. For sure. And, okay. And we, you know, I'm just kind of going on and on here, but the thing is like,
you're allowed to, this is a podcast.
Right on. People are doing their dishes. So, you know, the one thing that I just want to kind of the preface is all is those things of this is both those things are integral. You can't, like, for us, we aren't into preserving nature and leaving humans aside. Love protecting natural spaces just to be natural. That's so important. But we aren't going to solve the problem by putting a fence around nature and then just going on whole hog the way we want to, yeah, or the way that we are currently. Yeah. And so where we are, we really work in this nexus point, both in Tanzania and in Canada, around let's work in harmony with the natural world and so that there's co-benefit. So this gets back to carbon forestry. We've gone the full circle.
Nice.
Sounds
good.
Yeah.
I'm following. We're following.
Cool.
Following
anyways, yeah. Which is, you know, we protect forests and put them under sustainable management.
Yeah.
And, you know, for two values. We harvest wood for sale, and we figure out the stocking, value the carbon that's being sequestered, and we offset companies who want to be leaders in the environmental space. Cool. And
so they would buy shares, or how does that work? Like, what's the
let's throw that to Greg.
Let me tell you, Dave.
Oh, so you only work with very internationally well-known.
So for me as the owner of a company, and really the B Corp movement really kind of exposed me to this. You know, of course, I've always been had a heart for nature and the environment, and I think I'd be an entry level environmentalist, if you will. But in the context of building a business and being in the B Corp community, I realized everybody else was measuring their environmental impact. So there's profit, planet, and people is the three P's of the triple bottom line company. And
for a B Corp.
That's a universal metric. You know, how is your company impacting the bottom line, the economy, the planet, and society? So we always scored well on the social side, but we're always just kind of neutral on environments. You know, like we're a relatively low impact company by nature of being a film and digital company. But then I started realizing, I was like, holy jumpins, we're on airplanes.
I was just thinking about that so often.
Yeah. Like, we're constantly flying.
Yeah.
And then when I learned about what Zach and Jeff were doing, we just had a little chat over a glass of wine. And we're like, we want in. How many of us wants in? Because Zach's team came up and just interviewed us, figured out how many miles we drive, figured out how much server space we're using. Because, like, if we got to videos up on Vimeo or on YouTube, each of those sources actually have different carbon imprints.
I mean, and you have videos from 10 years ago when we did a video together.
That's so taking up server space. Yeah, that's burning carbon.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Interesting to note, YouTube is considers itself carbon neutral because of what Google invests in solar and other things. But like, these are things that I never thought of before. But our big, big impact was with airfare. So I talked to my travel agent, amazing woman named Terry, who just rocks it, because she actually, with at no extra cost for me, which is, she's amazing, she's got a spreadsheet of every single flight segment that we've done in the last 2 years. because we've been talking about working with CFI. So Hemmings House now, we generally know the amount of carbon tonnage that our company produces. The CFI team looks at the numbers and says, well, to offset that, you should probably buy or help us purchase and protect and sustainably harvest X amount of acres of a New Brunswick forest. So what makes me feel excited is what you just said, Zach, was it's not about putting a fence around this. It's about keeping the forest industry alive. It's about continuing to harvest this and create value add out of the wood, but doing it in a way that's not clear cutting, doing it in a way that's not going to be a monoculture forest, doing it in a way that we actually have a working carbon vacuum. Did I explain it appropriately?
You did excellent. That's awesome. Yeah.
I'm excited to as a company to
buy. Would Hemmings House have so many acres in a particular?
Exactly. Well, I did the numbers just to make sure I was on when I came here. But yeah, we looked at it, and I mean, this is relatively new. But yeah, I'm so excited that you're on this with us, Greg. It's awesome because it is new, and it takes some leadership to be like, you know what, this is a cost to our company, but we care about the environment and we want to be carbon neutral. So Hemmings, the forest that we protected is actually in Cambridge Narrows. It's part of a really important watershed, the Washtenaw. And the property, it's about 3 acres a year. This is old Acadian forest. Like, this is really healthy stuff. And the thing about old forest in New Brunswick is, you can imagine we do a lot of cutting, and whenever it changes hands, this is an older woman woman's property, Rubina Weatherly. She's actually, I think, Canada's first forest pathologist.
Oh, wow.
Somebody who really cares about the forest.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when properties change hands in New Brunswick, when you're old, the young folks aren't around, they're away, there is a 95% chance within 5 years that when land changes hands, it will be clear cut. So that's very high.
Wow.
So we can, pretty much rest assured that if we hadn't stepped in and purchased that property from Rubina, there's not a lot of people buying rural land for, it's the people who are buying
it. And you're buying it above market probably, right? Or at least at market.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Well, we're buying it at market. Actually, as a charity, we have to pay fair market value. But yeah, that's always a negotiation as well. But yeah.
So you, part of the service is you actually help them figure out how much carbon they're currently using. And then you figure out, okay, well, this is how you offset it, right? Mm-hmm. And then what is the transaction? Are they buying the service off you, or like, I'm just trying to get a sense of it.
That we're getting into the weeds because it gets pretty convoluted. I don't know if the best person to really flesh out all of the details.
But here's why I'm asking is that because I'm hoping someone else listening will be interested as I am, going,
for
oh, okay,
sure.
I wanna, how does this work?
Mm-hmm. Right. I think as a real quick way, maybe is we're not getting a certificate of land ownership through this transaction. CFI owns it. We're trusting CFI
to manage it. Yeah.
And we are buying
section.
It's kind of a handshake share, if you will. but I can't go to the bank with it. it's a CFI asset. Yeah. Am I saying that correct?
Yeah,
is a really great way. I don't want to manage a piece of property like that. I just want to offset the carbon.
Yeah, and it's they're buying an offset, which is, we are saying to our customers and to our employees, and, we found that actually companies are really interested in pitching this to their employees because people want to work for an employee, who really cares about the environment sometimes.
Yeah.
That could be a condition.
Right.
So they're purchasing their neutrality, and what they're really doing, again back to the impact, is they're protecting forests. Like, carbon offsets are not all created equal. They really vary in price, and what we're doing is we're protecting a forest. We actually put what's called a conservation easement on the property. It is a handshake, but it's also like we do our due diligence to protect the properties, which is a lot more than most forest offsets offer. And yeah, so we protect the property with an easement, and then we also are taking the responsibility to manage it and to steward it going forward, because part and parcel to these agreements is that they are harvested, because actually that, if you manage it sustainably and think about it, you actually can store more carbon through harvesting the old trees and letting new trees grow.
Right.
But it's all about how you do it. Like yeah. Dale will say, it's you can cut every tree on the property. You just can't cut them all at once.
At the same time, yeah.
You know, and,
yeah.
and so...
Do you know, you must know Matthew LeBlanc?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so he act for it.
Yeah,
and
he's, Matt's great.
He is like, I'm just amazed by this guy. We're in a group in the Wallace McCain Institute together, so I know him very well. And he walked me through a forest that had been, you know, that they had started managing 10 years ago, and then right beside it was a clear cut. And he was just, and it was so amazing just to the layman's eye. You could just see the difference, like the diversity, like, you know, like you could straddled the line. You could see diversity on this side and that, you know, that you got, I guess you call it monoculture on the other side. Right. And all the understanding of some of the challenges with that. So, but what I love what Matthew does and what you guys are doing is that you can do it in a sustainable, actually profitable way too.
Yeah, so,
like,
yeah, and
it's a like viable business. Yeah, it's not like this isn't, you know, like, it, you know, it's doing the right thing. But it's actually, you know, so the people are flying Matthew all over the world to say, how are you doing this? You know what I mean? Like you're not only doing it, but you're doing it where you're creating profit, right?
Well, I think that's a neat transition into, because we're coming close to the end of our interview. These guys are all over the world as well. And
clearly.
So much so that the other neat little tidbit here is another previous guest that we've had, Craig Norris from Video Band.
Yeah. I actually had a chance to interview him in my column too.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. There you go. He worked with CFI, with Zach and the team, to direct a beautiful film called Kokoda out of Pemba to tell the story of CFI and of the great work that's happening there. And Zach, why don't you explain the kind of the fun twist to that, you know, with the National Geographic? Like, that's really... really cool. Like, this is a huge amplification of what you guys are doing.
I know. It's so excellent. And kudos to Craig for making a great film. But it's soared. It did 7 awards during the film festival tour. It went all over the world, 35 film festivals.
Wow.
And as such, kind of got picked up by Nat Geo. They were interested in it. And then, you know, Hemmings came in and helped us make a shortened version. They wanted it something nice and short because the film was quite
like a feature doc.
It was longer, so yeah. You know, and they were looking for an online audience. And anyway, the new recut is exploding. It came out on December 24th. Couldn't have been better timing, you know. And everybody's home for the holidays, and people are thinking about, you know, maybe things a little bit bigger and being thankful and it's exploded. It's right around the 200,000 views mark since then.
That's excellent for a film of that, you know, because it's still long,
it's
right?
It's still long. It's like 15 minutes.
Watching something on YouTube that's more than 2 minutes, it's tough to get millions of views. So that's really good.
Yeah, and so we're excited about that. And you know, I think the film in general just has done really well. And I think one of the things that I'm, like, that's super exciting, but one of the things that I'm most proud of that the film did was actually in Tanzania. It was picked up by 4 national broadcasters, and you know, we did the math and talked to them, and it looks like it's 2.5 million Tanzanians have seen the film in Swahili about, you know, their place, about climate change, and that was really, really awesome too. They'd be like, yeah, this is awesome, man.
So Zach, where can people see the film? Yes. And this is the beginning of our wrap up, unfortunately. I wish we could keep talking. Where can people see the film? And then how do people get involved? Because I know there's a few other close friends of mine who are involved now, getting involved with the carbon offset program that you've got.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there's a lot more people who want to get involved. So this is your chance to pitch it and get people connected.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're in Sackville, New Brunswick. You can swing by the old schoolhouse. You do it the old-fashioned way. Obviously, we have a website, which is www.forestsinternational.org. We're on Facebook, Forests International. You know, you can search Pemba. I think we're the only folks working on Pemba Island. You know, whatever. You can find us on the internet and get in touch with me, Zach. I'm Zach at Forests International.
Can people outside of New Brunswick offset their carbon through your programs?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, one of our biggest clients is in Toronto, actually, and that we offset in the Maritimes. So that's the forests that we're focused on. So we at the moment don't go outside and like protect forests in, let's say, Ontario. It's not where we are. We don't have the capacity to manage it. But yeah, this is.
But what about climate change? Is climate change? You know what I mean? So it's going to impact us no matter where we're at. So does it really matter if the forest is in New Brunswick or?
It doesn't for the offset, but you know, for the ability to get out into it, it's kind of nice. But
yeah, totally. Well, Matt, thanks for everything that you're doing, Zach, for the world on all of our behalf, and certainly in New Brunswick, we are forestry. Centric province. That is our resource, and to know that
carbon vacuum.
Yeah, to know that we've got a perspective that it's not just valuable when cut. I think is one that we should all listen to, and we should put like a technical term to the carbon vacuum 2000, or like put a model number to it.
Yeah, for sure. I'm assuming it's kid friendly to watch this.
Sure.
It's a beautiful film, man.
It's on our website, and it's also on Nat Geo in the short film showcase. We're using the film hopefully to drive impact. We have a campaign on right now to bring water to another island that doesn't have water. So, you know, watch the film, and if it's something that touches your heart, help us help others.
And Zach, next time we connect in person, we will arrange it so we can actually hang out next time. this is such a quick half hour. But I would love, next time we hang out, for you to take my team and I to the property.
Let's do it.
That would be cool. And
I would
some
love
video
to.
Of it. And because this is the first time, like, we've been involved with this for quite a few months now, but it's been really this is the first time we've talked about it publicly on this podcast, so I'm excited to go actually see the land. Amazing.
Let's do it. That would be most excellent. You got snowshoes?
What's that?
You got snowshoes?
So I thought you said you got some issues. I was like, yeah.
You got
not with you, but
no snowshoes.
The forest will make it better.
My issues are about 8 pounds
forest
away,
bathing.
Then I won't have any issues anymore. Yeah, I definitely have snowshoes.
Great.
And ready to rock that. Zach, thanks for coming down, man.
Thanks, Zach.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. It's been a treat.
It's been a tree.
A tree. Nice. Oh,
dad
man.
Joke.
Thanks for checking out this episode of Boiling Point. Remember to rate and subscribe to us on iTunes and follow us on Twitter at Boiling Point Pod. To see more from Dave Vail, check out leadershipunleashed.ca or visioncoachinginc.com and on Twitter at Dave_Vail. And to catch up with Greg, visit hemmingshouse.com and at Greg Hemmings on Twitter. Thanks for listening, and remember, keep that pot boiling.
Hi, I'm Connie Thiessen, the host of Broadcast Dialogue, the podcast. We focus on Canada and the challenges facing Canadian radio and TV, as well as highlighting those moving the industry forward from podcasting and streaming to new broadcast tech. Check us out at broadcastdialogue.com or your favorite podcast app.